extra dimensions is the Randall, that's an example, Randall syndrome model. That's an example of a model in extra dimensions. They are worked because there is some curvature. In this case, it's the anti-de Sitter curvature. So the Randall syndrome model is a model in anti-de Sitter in five dimensions in a slice of anti-de Sitter. So what is the anti-de Sitter metric? The anti-de Sitter metric looks like some work factor multiplying the four-dimensional slice of your metric, and then there is this extra dimension y. So what you see is that for every position into the extra dimension, you are going to get some kind of warping that depends on the position. You can do a change of coordinates. In particular, you can do z as exponential of ky over k. And these coordinates look very nice because then your metric is going to be some warp factor, some conformal factor multiplying a flat metric in five dimensions. So this is just the flat metric in five dimensions, and what we are saying is that an ADS is actually conformal to a flat five-dimensional metric. So this is sometimes called a conformally flat metric. So often when you look at papers based on ADS, you will see this kind of parametrizations. One of them, this first parametrization, shows explicitly how the position in the extra dimension gets a dependence that is exponential. So that's kind of nice. The other parametrization is useful because you see that you get something that looks like flat or Minkowski five dimensions with just this conformal factor. Okay. But Randall syndrome model is not a model just in ADS5. It's a model in ADS5 where we put brains, as we did in large extra dimensions. So RS is a model in what is called a slice of ADS, meaning that your coordinates don't go from y equals 0 to infinity, which will be the normal choice for ADS5, but actually what you do is add two brains to the picture, one in y equals 0 and the other one in y equals L. So it is just a slice of the ADS geometry. Okay. So the notation I'm going to use, and this is the way we talk about this kind of models nowadays, is to talk about the UV brain. This is the IR brain. If you change to the z coordinates, that goes from y equals 0 means z equals 1 over k to z. In this case, it's going to be 1 over TeV. So we are going to set the position of the extra brain, the infrared brain, to be in these coordinates, in the conformally flat coordinates, to be 1 over TeV. We are going to see in a second what I mean by the UV brain and the TeV brain. But as I told you yesterday, the way ADS5 or Randall syndrome solves the hierarchy problem is a non-trivial way, because what they say is that in ADS, They are going to impose that the mass, the plan mass, the fundamental plan mass in five dimensions is of the same order of the fundamental plan, sorry, the plan mass in four dimensions is of the same order of the curvature and actually of the same order over 1 over L, the length or the position of the brain. So in Randersundum, there are no separated scales. It's not like in largest dimensions yesterday, we were talking about how the fundamental Planck scale was related to the four-dimensional Planck scale multiplied by some volume in N, and this was N plus 2, and that was a square. So the way largest dimensions solve the hierarchy problem is saying that this is very small because the volume is very big. So the fundamental parameter in your theory, five-dimensional, no, the five-dimensional, in this case, the d-dimensional Planck scale is still TeV. We are just fooling ourselves measuring something that looks like M Planck, 10 to the 18 GeVs, because we have a large volume. So in largest dimensions, you do reshuffle the problem of why the Planck scale is so large into the problem of why the volume is so large. And that's another problem. In Randersundum, the solution is not going to be looking for scales that are widely separated. All the scales you can look at, the Planck scale, four-dimensional effective Planck scale, curvature, and the position of the infrared brain are all of the same order. So the solution to the hierarchy problem in this case is due to a simple fact. It's just that physics is redshifted. So let's look at this idea. Okay. So why is physics redshifted? Because the local value of the energy that you measure in a particular position depends on the time-time component of your metric, which then is a function, sorry, of the position in the extra dimension. This is not a new idea. You've seen that before. When you've done cosmology, you learn about this cosmological redshift. So an example of this idea is cosmological redshift. So you are describing, for example, photons that appear at the beginning of the universe, and then you follow the evolution of these photons as the universe expands, and then you realize that because the geometry itself is stretching, then you start with a photon of a very short wavelength. So the photon is emitted with some particular momentum and wavelength, and at some point T the emission, and if you let some time pass, then these photons have been stretched. So the mere fact that the geometry itself is stretching brings to this kind of redshift. So when you observe this photon, you have to account for the stretching of your geometry. Have you seen that in cosmology? Okay, cool. So the way it works is because if you look at the Friedman-Robertson-Walker metric, your time-time component is this factor that has to do with the expansion of the universe, right? So when you account for that, then you see that P emitted is P observed with a factor that goes as A of T observed, A of T emitted to the minus 1. So I can only use this lower. Okay, I can live with that. All right. So in the Robertson worker metric, because we have something multiplying the energy component, and this something depends on the time, the evolution of the universe, then the once we emit a photon, for example, the momentum is going to be stretched. The wavelength is going to be elongated because of the expansion of the universe. And that's the way to account for this effect. So in Randall-Sundrum, we have a very similar effect. So in this case, you see that P emitted over G naught naught at the time of emission is the same as P observed over G naught naught at the time of observation. Okay. So in Randall-Sundrum, you do a local measurement of energy or momentum, and you have to account for this work factor. Your G naught naught is exponential of minus 2ky. So there is a similar effect. You can call that the Randall-Sundrum redshift. The idea is I have my slice of ADS, one brain, the ultraviolet brain, the other brain, the infrared brain, right? And I look here at my physics. And I say, well, I write a Lagrangian. My physics is described by some Lagrangian where all the fundamental scales are the same order. So we have M Planck, we have the curvature, and so on and so forth. They are very high scales. Now, I want to look at physics in any other position in the extra dimension. So that's at y equals 0. This is my UV brain. And now I want to look at physics, the same physics, the same Lagrangian, everything the same, but now at a position y, let's say y star, some particular position in the bulk of the extra dimensions. So you are going to see that M Planck, which is the cutoff of your theory, is going to translate into a local cutoff that depends on the position in the extra dimension. And the way it depends is exactly the same as here. So we are going to get that M Planck divided by the work factor at the UV, this is 0, so this is just 1, is going to be the same as my local cutoff divided by exponential of minus k demico y star. Okay? So scales that look very high at a particular position in the extra dimension are redshifted to lower values as you move into the extra dimension. So my local cutoff of any position is going to be exponential of minus ky, the original cutoff. So that's the RS redshifting. Sucks not to have this. Okay. Any questions? So the same way we see it looks apparently as different physics as the universe is expanding. We started with a very hot energetic universe, and then it expanded, the geometry expanded, and then it looks like we have a very different universe nowadays. Yes.
So the fine tuning becomes a tuning of
Yes.
And because of the exponential factor, it's not a huge fine tuning, but a much like a logarithm.
Yes, and so now what we want to do is to find reasons why this cutoff is natural in order TV. And we are going to see what it means in terms of this position. So indeed, because it's exponential, something of order n makes it up. Yes. So critics of Randall Sundum will say that they just found a way of translating a small number into a big number to exponentials. Who can? Everybody can do that. Mathematics. Remember, this is the same kind of behavior you get in a dimensional transmutation. And that has consequences, right? When we want to draw a dual of ADS with a Stoney couple theory, this kind of redshifting in ADS, the RS redshift, is actually dimensional transmutation in the Stoney couple theory. So there is a nice meaning of this. Not only the geometry, it's also telling you how the dynamics go from having an order one dimensionless parameter translated into a hierarchy of scales.
Yes. But how are the dynamics in the extra dimension?
So the way this holography is about avoiding addressing the dynamics, right? You just want a tool that encodes part of the information of these dynamics in this model in Randall Sundum without having to actually do work. Work would be to do a lattice computation of a very complicated system and see what you get out of it. Those would be simulating dynamics. Randall Sundum just gives you the setup that encodes parts of these dynamics. For example, the metric leads to this redshift. The redshift can be interpreted as being dimensional transmutation.
Okay, but I meant that why should we be in Y star and move in Y from Y not Y zero to Y star?
So I guess you're asking me how do I compactify my ADS? Right.
Well,
I have an ADS, it could be anti de Sitter, but it could be infinite. Instead of that, I'm saying I have an anti de Sitter in a slice, and on the strings of this slice, I put two brains. And then and we discuss how in string theory you can localize fields in these brains because topological similarity, blah, blah. So what you're asking me is how do I get to this compactification? I don't know, and what I do. That's the answer, the short answer. Another question is, once I obtain this particular compactification, how do I stabilize it? So in Randall Sundum, there is a specific proposal of stabilization called the Goldberger-Weiss.
Goldberger-Weiss mechanism. Upa. So there is a way of stabilizing these two brains at those particular positions. There is a mechanism. But yeah, how do I get to start from some number of dimensions and compactify to ADS? I do not know, and as far as I know, string theories do not know either. Yes. Yes. The idea of the Goldberger-Weiss is, I have these two brains, and they would like to stretch, right? There is no reason why they want to stay at these particular fixed points. So what the Goldberger-Weiss does is they add a scalar field in the bulk, which has some couplings localized on the boundaries. And they made this coupling so strong that it stabilizes the position. So the scalar gets a BEF that is a function of the separation between these two guys. So at the minimum of all possible configurations of the scalar, I get the stability position for the two brains. You can also think on the Goldberger-Weiss as what you do is to add a very, very strong hook with a constant that is very large. So it's really a hook that, adds some kind of resistance for the brains to move. That's what the Goldberger-Weiss field is doing at the end of the day.
to find
because you have to find the right potential, right? For to find L.
Yes.
The potential has to be fine-tuned, right?
No, that's precisely. Goldberger Wells brings you gives you a potential for the scalar field, and what they show is there's some assumptions about symmetries for this scalar. You get a potential that minimizes at a distance. And what matters is that KL, the curvature times the distance, is order one. So that's what they showed. Now, that is order one instead of, to get the TEV, we are going to see in a second, to get exactly the TEV scale, I need to get 11.2 here. So if I started with something that gave me 11.7, I will get a completely different answer. So no solution is great. Okay. So Randa Sundum provides an explanation of why we seem to see physics that looks with energy that are much smaller than the Planck mass. So let's see how this works in practice. This is just an heuristic argument of why we expect exponential suppression. But let's do it explicitly. So this formula there is telling you that if we want lambda to be order TeV, then that tells you that why the position of the brain where you are going to localize TeV physics has to be of the order of 1 over k, which is of the order of 1 over n Planck in the 5 dimensions, which is also the order of 1 over n Planck in 4 dimensions. Okay. So the solution of Randall-Sundum to the hierarchy problem is to say that Higgs physics, Higgs or electroweak physics is stable under radiative corrections and other kinds of corrections because it is confined to live near a position of YTEV. So we manage to find a way of confining the Higgs and all its physics to a position near this YTEV, we are done. Then whatever the Higgs is doing, whatever the way the Higgs talks to other standard model particles, is going to suffer this Randall-Sundum redshift. All right? Okay, so let's see how we do that. Yes. No, I don't mean that. The only thing we need, you remember, fermions, gauge bosons, they are all right. We have the symmetries to protect them. The only guy that is giving us trouble is this fundamental scalar, the Higgs. And we want this guy to produce electroweak symmetry breaking, so we want to associate the scalar to some particular scale, electroweak symmetry, electroweak symmetry breaking. So we just need the Higgs to be confined near the YTEV. Because what matters is how the Higgs talks to the top, talks to any high scale. So as long as the Higgs is near the TeV scale, the Higgs is going to always feel a local cutoff that is TeV, even if it comes from much higher energies. So the standard model actually is going to live anywhere. I'm going to show you in a second. But the Higgs must live near this position YTeV. Yes?
Field in the fifth dimension is such that it is peaked around the TV scale.
Yes, it's either localized in a brain at the TV scale or TV position, or we are going to show how a scalar can be localized near the TV. One or the two. Either way works. So indeed, how do we localize fields in Randazundo?
You are going to do a tutorial today discussing gauge bosons and fermions. And I'm going to do in this class the scalars, as such as the Higgs. So one possibility is you stack them on a brain. You just put a brain at the TV scale, put the Higgs there. It cannot live anywhere else. So obviously, the cutoff of Higgs physics is going to be TeV. The other is to use their wave function or the profile in the extra dimension. To make sure that this guy lives close by of a YTEV. So this afternoon in the homework, you are going to do two cases, gauge fields, fermion fields. I'm going to do the scalar field because it's a little bit trickier, believe it or not. OK, so I'm going to move this.
So is it true that one of the brains in Randazundo model has to have negative tension, which is unphysical?
It would be unphysical if it was the only object there, but the question is that what matters is that the total, so yes, in the original Randazundo model you have a bulk cosmological constant that has to be slightly cancelled with the tension of one of the brains, which is minus the tension of the other brain, roughly up to numbers. So you have two fine tunings in Randazundo. One of them is with a negative tension, indeed. But this is a stable configuration because this guy of negative tension is in a bulk with this guy that has a positive cosmological constant. Why these fine tunings? You need these fine tunings to obtain four dimensional Minkowski metric. By the way, what Goldberger Weiss mechanism is doing is explaining this particular fine tuning, but it never explains this. So in Randazundo, you always end up with one fine tuning, huge cosmological constant, but that's true of four dimensional quantum field theory. We don't know what solves the cosmological constant. OK, so situation is we will be OK with having a light scalar if this scalar was localized in a position in the extra dimension near the TeV scale. So we want to see how to use the profile in the extra dimensions to localize the Higgs near the TeV. Yes.
So
you are wondering if I take the option of putting a Higgs here, where do we live? Our electrons and protons live. I'm going to show you at the end, but we actually live here, mostly near the UV brain. But we do communicate to the Higgs, and we do communicate to photons and gluons and other interactions to the profile in the extra dimension. We're going to see this in detail.
But again, is this five dimension just like an energy flow or like an energy dimension?
You can interpret the extra dimension as not being real, just being an energy flow, where as you move into the extra dimension, what you are doing is integrating out the piece of freedom, and you're just looking at, like, for example, any quantity of that is running with the energy flow. Is like the quantity evaluated at 1 over z. Yes, there's a holographic interpretation. Well, you know a lot. But for the moment, we are taking Randazundo as a real extra dimension. So the scalar case.
So yesterday we did the scalar case in flat space. We are going to do the scalar case in Randall Sundrum. And as usual, I take my scalar field that depends on four dimensions and the fifth dimension. And I'm going to do my Kaluza-Klein decomposition of those are my four-dimensional Kaluza-Klein modes. And they are multiplied by a profile in the extra dimension. OK. So you can do the same motions as yesterday. You will get the operator in 5D. But now this operator is not just derivative. It also contains pieces of the metric. And at the end of the day, the equation of motion for the profile looks like this for a scalar. Of N. Okay. So this comes from the Laplacian. This M is a mass term. M is the scalar mass term in the bulk. What I mean is that my Lagrangian in five dimensions contains a mass term of this type, where this is a five-dimensional field. So this guy is going to give you an extra contribution. So you get the Laplacian, the mass, and now I'm going to get this Kaluza-Klein mass. So first of all, what is the natural value for M? M Planck. We don't want to introduce new scales. Our five-dimensional theory has a real cutoff, which is M Planck. Curvature, length, everything is ordered M Planck. So if I introduce a new mass scale in my theory, it better be that it's of the same order as the others. Now, this MN, you will see this afternoon in the tutorial, those guys end up being order TeV. Okay, so what I'm going to do here is not the whole Kaluza-Klein decomposition. I'm going to focus on the zero modes, the massless modes, and see whether I can localize them or not. Because my Higgs is a particle, at least at zero level, I would like this particle to be massless, and then give masses through, for example, loop corrections. So from this equation, we want to obtain the zero modes. Those will be the four-dimensional. Yes? So what is the mass?
So, I mean, what's the definition?
So when I'm doing this Kaluza-Klein decomposition and saying my five-dimensional field looks in four dimensions as a bunch of new fields, four-dimensional fields, with this profile, and this guy is going to be a massive field of mass MN, my assumption. This is the same we did yesterday for sure. Plasma. No, it's very good. I'm sure other people don't remember. Okay. So this, what this means is that if I take the four-dimensional Laplacian of this guy, I'm going to get minus MN squared. So in the low energy effective description, those guys are really just four-dimensional massive fields. So by imposing this is where I get here. This equation is precisely imposing these conditions.
Shouldn't the equation have phi to the phi squared?
Yes, well, you can ask. Okay. Good. All right, so let's focus on the zero mode. Why do I care about the zero modes? Because those guys will be the lightest moves, and they will be what appears in my effective description. And we discussed yesterday how you obtain this effective description. You integrate out, you dimensionally reduce your Lagrangian, integrating out all the Kaluza-Klein modes, and just keeping the zero mode. So my effective four-dimensional description is going to be the physics of the zero mode. Okay, so in the scalar case, we are going to first do the case of no mass term in the back. Okay, right. So we set Mn to zero. We want the zero mode. And then in this equation up there, I'm going to set this to zero, no bulk mass, no Kaluza-Klein mass. So I just get this equation equals zero. So you are going to get that exponential of minus 4ky derivative, in this case of the zero mode, is equal zero. That's your equation. And the solution is pretty simple. So Fn will be a constant plus another constant exponential of 4ky. So how do we obtain these constants? What do you think, Ali? What do we use to obtain these constants?
Normalization.
Okay. Normalization will give you some relation between C and C prime. Anything else?
Boundary conditions.
Second order differential equation, boundary conditions. Okay. So what are the boundary conditions? They could either be, we have two brains, so we have four options. It could be plus, plus minus, minus plus, or minus minus, which this means boundary conditions in the UV. So this is a general solution, but we need this solution to be compatible with the boundary conditions we are imposing. So in the case of plus plus, what you end up obtaining is that the zero mode has to be a constant. So there is no dependence in the extra dimension. Now, how do we obtain this constant? What I just said, we are going to obtain this constant by imposing normalization. And remember, imposing normalization is the same statement as saying, at the end of the day, I want my zero mode to have the effective description of a canonically normalized scalar. Yes?
It doesn't look to me like the second term solves the equation. Or am I just completely...
So...
Without a derivative equation.
Ah, sorry, sorry, yes. Thank you. Yes. Good. You always catch me when you do something stupid. That's right. Okay, so plus plus. The only compatible solution with those boundary conditions is to have a constant. And the constant is determined by imposing normalization, which is the same statement as having a canonically normalized four-dimensional scalar. What about plus, minus, minus, plus, or minus, minus? If you now go here and try to obtain any guy with a minus boundary condition anywhere, you are going to get that there is no way F naught is zero.
So the notation is a little confusing.
Yes.
The C prime and C double prime, they're all independent constants, right?
Yes.
They're not derivative.
Yeah, I'm saying that from this equation, you get that the thing in front has to be a constant, and then you integrate this equation, and then you get a constant and another constant multiplied by this whole factor. And the way to determine the constants is by looking at the boundary conditions and the normalization. So this is important. What this is telling you is that the only way to obtain a Maastricht zero mode, to obtain a guide that will stay in the low energy Lagrangian, is by imposing plus plus boundary conditions. Any other choice where you impose any minus boundary conditions is going to project out the zero mode. So the minus boundary condition in either of the brains is projecting out the zero mode. Okay. So now let's do the other case. What is this result? It's telling you that for a scalar field, if I don't have any bulk mass term, the only profile I can get is a constant. Either I project it out, or if it stays there, this scalar is going to be flat profile. This is also called delocalized. Why is it called delocalized? Because now this scalar field lives everywhere in the bulk with the same support in every position in the bulk. So there is no specific localization inside the bulk where you can say the scalar field lives mostly there. That's why you call this situation delocalization. Yes, so this is coming to the, you're asking me what is the ADS CFT dictionary entry for a plus plus. Having a scalar field that is massless and is dislocalized is the same as this guy is a pseudo Goldstone boson. It's going to be the Goldstone boson. So you want to add a global symmetry that is spontaneously broken to your four dimensional stochastic coupled theory. One way of signaling this spontaneously. The spontaneous breaking of the symmetry is by adding this plus plus line. Yes?
How does that differ from a free field?
From
a free field that's, that you can just.
This guy can have interactions. And the interactions, by the way, so now we have this scalar field, zero mode, living in the bulk everywhere, right? So the interactions of this scalar field would be proportional to whatever coupling constant you put in your Lagrangian, but also they will depend on the localization of the other fields.
It's just that, I mean, you have an option of this being delocalized, and it's the same as a free field being delocalized. As a free field. Because you take QFT, you write it in terms of creation operators and the way you add.
You use the same word, but it's not the same meaning. Delocalization here means a delocalization in the extra dimension video. So it's an abuse of language, but that's what people use, delocalization. And it means just that the scalar from maybe being stuck on a brain or being localized here or there, it happens to be everywhere in the bulk. So there is no preferred position for the scalar. But indeed, this guy can interact. And their interactions will depend on the position. Like if the scalar field interacts with a guy living near the UV, it's going to feel exactly the same interaction as somebody living near the IR. Why? Because the guy is delocalized into the extra dimension. It doesn't care where in the extra dimension the fields he is interacting with. Okay, so let's now go to the other more complicated case. So see, with no bulk mass term, there is no way of localizing this guy. And we want to localize the Higgs near the TEV brain. So that doesn't work for us. This guy has the dual meaning of being a Goldstone boson, indeed. But this is not useful for us. So we are going to add a mass term. And then your equation is going to be very similar. and your solution, you plug this into Mathematica, you get something like a constant, exponential at 2ky, multiplied by this guy, I'm going to define in a second, plus another constant, exponential at 2ky, 1 plus. So it's a linear combination of two solutions, where alpha is a function of the bulk mass term. 1 plus n squared over 4k. So this is your solution.
So we seem to have a superposition of two solutions that behave very differently in the bulk. They have different powers of the exponential. Yes. Because we are trying to find the zero moves. We want to find the guys that will contribute to the effective theory at low energies. M0, so we are setting M0 to 0. We are trying to find whether there are zero moves or not. So I set M. Now, in this case, I'm keeping the bulk mass, but I want to still obtain a zero mode. And I'm just hoping that by doing this, I will get somebody that is actually localized. So you can write this as being exponential of 2ky of C1. OK. So to set C1 and C2, we need to look at the boundary conditions. Let's look first at the UV boundary conditions, meaning the conditions you impose in y equals 0. Let's say we impose minus boundary conditions in the UV. That means F naught at y equals 0 is 0, and that leads to C1 equals minus C2. And if we do plus boundary conditions, we get actually C1 equals C2. So whether I get a minus or plus boundary conditions in the UV, I'm going to end up with combinations that are either hyperbolic sinus or a hyperbolic cosinus here. So I know for sure that my zero mode now, once I impose ultraviolet boundary conditions, is going to look as exponential of 2ky, and then either a hyperbolic sinus or cosinus of 2ky alpha. All right, so that's the form of my zero mode. So let's look now at the conditions in the infrared. So IR boundary conditions. If I impose minus boundary conditions, it means that the function at the IR is 0. It means that a sinus, hyperbolic sinus or cosinus is 0, and that doesn't have any solution in the real plane. So there are no solutions that satisfy these boundary conditions, or in other words, the only solutions are 0. That C1 and C2 are actually 0. So putting an infrared boundary condition with a minus is actually integrating, projecting out the zero modes. No surprise, you knew that already. Okay, what if I put a plus boundary condition? Then I'm going to get that the derivative in the IR goes as you take the derivative, it goes like this of alpha, either a cosh or a sinh, plus either a sinh or a cosh. So So I'm being very sketchy here, but if you take this derivative, you get the three factor times your original function with something that depends on alpha and the derivatives of these functions. Okay. Now alpha is defined positive. Precisely the way we define alpha here is by setting this the positive root. So alpha is positive. Sinh and cosh are positive. So this guy is always positive. So you end up with a funny situation where in this case we get exactly the same. F naught is zero. So there are no zero modes with M different from zero. Okay. So you see, we go from the situation where the bulk mass is zero, we get a zero mode with plus plus boundary conditions, exactly the same situation as flat space. As soon as we switch on one mass term in the Lagrangian, these zero modes disappear. So what's happening? It looks like this is a jump that is non-continuous. Just adding this zero, this mass term seems to project out all the zero modes, even in the plus plus boundary condition. What is happening is that, let's look at the plus plus boundary conditions. We know that for M equals zero, we do have a zero mode. So if I set this, my energy scale, and I put zero here, I know that for M equals zero, I'll get a zero mode, and then my Kaluza-Klein mode. So what's happening in Randall-Sundom is that when I set M different from zero, this guy is going to be projected out to a value of order M. Whereas the Kaluza-Klein modes are just going to be shifted. Sorry, I'm very bad at this. Shifted a little bit. You will see that with the fermions this afternoon, but the positions of the Kaluza-Kleins, the resonances with and without mass, are very similar. There is a slight dependence on the mass, but it's very small. Whereas the zero mode really suffers the whole effect of the mass term, in the sense that this guy decides to pick up the mass exactly of M. So you would say, okay, then I put an M that is very small. If I put an M below the mass of the Kaluza-Kleins, then I'm going to keep my zero mode in the spectrum. But is this reasonable? Is this something you can do in Randall-Sundom? Can I add a mass term in the bulk, meaning a five-dimensional mass term that is very small as compared with M Planck? No? That's reintroducing the hierarchy problem. So in RS, M has to be order M Planck, and the zero mode mass has to be order M. So this, what we will, there will be zero mode as soon as you switch on a mass term is projected out to the cutoff of the theory. So it looks like in Randall-Sundom we cannot localize scalar fields in any position, meaning zero modes of a scalar field. That's what you will think, but it is not true, because there are more tricks you can play in Randall-Sundom or in any extra dimension. You can take your action in the bulk and then add localized actions, so boundary action. So in particular, you can, to your scalar theory, you can add a boundary action that looks like d4x dy square root of minus g, a boundary mass term. Did I do it right? Yes. But then this guy is localized because here we are going to add delta functions. We are going to add a delta function in the UV brain, so at y equals 0. And we are going to choose the particular coefficient of this other delta function to be at the TEV scale. So what I'm saying is I want localized scalar fields. It seems that just adding bulk mass terms, the only possible outcome is that the zero mode is projected out to the cutoff, right? So one way of avoiding that is to add boundary terms of this particular form. And then we can discuss how natural is to have this coefficient to be exactly this coefficient here with a minus sign. Yes?
It's the zero mode at the time scale.
So in flat space, that's the case anyway. In flat space, such as large star dimensions, universal star dimensions, the mass of any of your modes, if you are a bulk mass term, is going to be as n over l squared plus whatever bulk mass term. So if I put a bulk mass term that is order n Planck, I'm going to shift the whole Kaluza-Klein towers, including the zero mode here, to the cutoff. Randersundum is better in the sense that once you add a bulk mass term that is very large, the only thing that is shifting is the zero mode. The Kaluza-Klein tower is still there because the way the Kaluza-Klein masses depend on the bulk mass is not the same as flat space. So we do know, at least in flat space, that adding a large bulk mass term is just pushing the whole tower. In Randersundum, you just push the zero mode, but the tower stays there. So it's very different, and the phenomenology is very different, as you can imagine.
So does the zero mode become the heaviest possible mode?
It's fun. Sure. Well, I think that this n can go to infinity, but you don't trust your theory beyond n Planck. So it will become as heavy as the heaviest Kaluza-Klein you can consider anyway. Yes?
So this n boundary is also...
So yes, n boundary is again some Planck of the order of the Planck scale. So what is this doing for us? When you add this boundary term,
remember, all these plus or minus boundary conditions came because in extra dimensions, having an interval, a finite extra dimension, you need to cancel the extra boundary terms, and canceling them means plus or minus boundary conditions. By adding these boundary terms, your new boundary conditions are going to be of the type partial y of f as some boundary equals mb or f. At this boundary. Okay. So the modified plus boundary conditions now depend on this boundary mass term. That changes the story a lot because here we didn't get any zero modes. We couldn't find solutions for these equations. Once you add this new piece of information, then adds new zero modes. And those guys are going to have a file that goes as exponential of mby. So now we have a situation where we can add a bulk mass term, but if we also add a boundary mass term, we recover zero modes, and those zero modes are localized. Because if mb is bigger than zero or smaller than zero, you are going to get completely different profiles in the extra dimension. So we go from this to this. So by adding the boundary terms, we find solutions of massless scalars that are localized near the UV or near the IR, depending on the sign of this guy. Yes. And B,
look here. I'm writing this term, putting a negative sign here in the infrared. I can also do it the other way around. So it looks like a tachyonic mass. It isn't. If you look at the physical
mass. So MB squared is less than.
So MB, MB itself. It's plus or minus.
But I mean, the axon has only MB squared.
So
yeah,
right.
It shouldn't really matter whether you have.
So indeed, sorry. MB can be either sign. MB squared this term is not going to change. All right. Okay, but the solution depends on MB, and then MB can be either sign. And then you get zero modes are either UV or IR localized.
So you're going to see in the tutorial this afternoon that you can do exactly the same with fermions. With fermions seems simpler, that's why I wanted to do this case. So fermions, you can add as regular mass term in the bulk. So no boundary terms, just mass term. And if I define this parameter CF to be the mass of the fermion over the curvature, so it's a parameter that is order one. Then this afternoon you will see that if CF is equals 1/2 exactly, you get delocalized fermion profiles. If CF is bigger than 1/2, you get UV localized. And if smaller than 1/2, you get IR localized. So the fermionic case is simpler. You get massless zero modes that can be localized, delocalized, or UV or IR localized, or even delocalized. The scalar field was a little bit trickier, but you can also obtain that. Okay. So what we learned here is that one, the physics. The physics you describe in four dimensions depends on the local cutoff. It depends on the position, right? And with this exercise, we saw that we can localize fields anywhere in the extra dimension. So in Ares, one, physics depends on the position with this local cutoff to be exponential of minus ky, the fundamental cutoff. Two, zero modes. My standard model fields can be localized anywhere. There are mechanisms to localize them in any position in the extra dimension. So that opens a lot of possibilities for model building in these kind of scenarios, where you can address questions such as flavor problem, fermion mass hierarchy problem, neutrino masses, all kinds of things. That's because the phenomenology of Randall Sundum is so rich. So when you read any model or any paper based on Randall Sundum, the first thing is to know the setup. The setup is telling you where is what, essentially. That's the setup. Where are the fields localized? So I'm going to tell you what is the most common. Most common setup nowadays is the following. So UV brain, IR brain, the most common setup is to say that you have a bunch of UV localized fields. Among those, you have light fermions. So for example, the U, D, C, S, the electrons, the muons, the neutrinos, the graviton is also localized there. There is a bunch of IR localized fields, which are obviously the Higgs. This is the dangerous guy. The Higgs or whatever breaks or is responsible of electroweak symmetry breaking. With whatever I mean, sometimes you don't want to use the Higgs, you want to use something else, like in Technicolor. Well, you put it near the infrared. All the low lying Kaluza-Klein modes, meaning the only guys that we have any hope of producing at the Large Hadron Collider are IR localized fields, and usually the top and the bottom, all the heavy fields. And who is delocalized? Delocalized into the extra dimensions are all these guys that need to be massless. For example, all the Gauge bosons, the photon and the gluon are delocalized, and the W and Z are delocalized before electroweak symmetry breaking. Once they feel electroweak symmetry breaking, their profile in the extra dimension is going to go from flat to have a little small curvature, but it's mostly flat in the extra dimension. So that's almost the end of it. That's the picture we mostly use nowadays for model building in Randall-Sundum, in world extra dimensions. This is the picture that explains why light fermions are light. Because they talk to the Higgs in an exponentially suppressed manner. Why the heavy fermions are heavy? Because they talk to the Higgs with an order one parameter in an unsuppressed manner. Why the photon, the gluon, the W, and the Z have universal couplings to all the families? Because they are flat into the extra dimension, and they don't care you live here or here. So they see the light quarks and the heavy quarks in the same manner. Yes?
The IR.
Sorry?
The tower?
Yes.
IR.
They are the low-lying Kaluza-Klein modes, the tower. Are near the IR.
No, the Tau, the third generation.
Shavalepton.
Ah, the Tau, yes, sorry. Depends on your model. If you want to explain the large Tau coupling, you will put it near the IR, but not too near, not closer than the top and the bottom. What is important, yes. I'm going to stop now, but tonight in the tutorial, this afternoon, you are going to actually obtain this. You are going to look at Yukawa interactions of the Higgs to fermions. And you are going to see what kind of mass terms you have to add to the fermions to get the Yukawas you want. You want. In Randall-Sundum, you explain the fermion mass hierarchy by saying, starting with order one parameters here, there are all the mass terms of all the fermions are order one. But when I translate these order one parameters into a four-dimensional Yukawa, I get exponential suppressions. So what is cool about Randall-Sundum is that it explains hierarchies without the use of symmetries. Remember, in the standard model, the only way we can explain or try to explain the fermion mass hierarchy is using this Fragan-Nielsen mechanism, which is adding a bunch of horizontal symmetries. Here, there are no symmetries involved. There is a dynamical process where order one parameters translate into widely separated scales. That's, yes. Fragan-Nielsen. I never know if it's one or two G's or one or two T's, but and this is Nielsen. It's a pretty horrible mechanism, yeah.
So here, instead of having to assign by hand a bunch of charges and there are a bunch of symmetries, you just say C's happen to be randomly distributed. And if you have a C of order 1 or 1.7, you get completely different answers. So that explains why we see the fermions to have completely different couplings to the Higgs. So fermion mass hierarchy is solved in this way in Randall-Sundu. It's a very nice way of solving it without symmetries.
Yes, so they are looking for it. Most of what they are doing, the experimentalists are still stuck with the original Randall-Sundu model. The original Randall-Sundu model was gravity lives in the bulk, everybody else is in the infrared range. This is horrible because as soon as you put light fermions in the infrared range, you have bounds from four fermion operators. We haven't seen any of these guys, so this theory is completely ruled out. Still, experimentalists are still looking. So hopefully they start looking for other more reasonable things. So model builders theories are using this picture. Experimentalists are using some other.